Okay, let's start. Let's start her up. Okay, tomorrow we are going to Maaret HaMachpelah. Please, everyone come. This isn't optional. It's really important. We're going to talk about it tonight. Let's get a couple things out of the way. Number one, if for whatever reason you can't go or you think about not going, please speak to your Rebbe. In that case, that would be me, the people in my shir. It's Erev Yom Tov. We're not taking off a day of Seder just to take a trip somewhere. If you want it, you want, you know, you rest. It's a day of Avodas Hashem. As you know, we're probably going to be shutting things down relatively from Sunday until Yom Kippur. So when we normally go during Aseret Yemei Teshuva, which is when Am Yisrael goes, we can't go this year, so we want to get there while we still can. So please, it's not a trip and you sign up or you don't sign up. It's a day in which we're being mevatel a lot of Torah, a lot of Bittul Torah. Bittul Torah is a serious thing in this yeshiva, and or all yeshivas. So we're doing it because we feel that it will connect, and hopefully we'll talk about how we'll connect tonight, but please. Now, are there any Kohanim? There are different shittos. Those shittos that are makil for Kohanim is because of many, many, many halacha kulos. I wouldn't say kulos that are weak, because they're buried very, very, very deep in the ground. There's a lot of space between them. What you're looking at is not their tombs. These are just monuments that were built in that area. It's hard to know exactly where they are, but there are different shittos. And whatever your father, if your father, well, if you're a Kohen, I hope your father's a Kohen. Whatever his shita is, if your father does not have a shita, or you're confused, whatever. So our general recommendation is not to go into the Maaret HaMachpelah. It means you will then have this chus to stand where Jews have stood for thousands of years until we were allowed to enter the Maaret HaMachpelah. There's a little area near the outside. There's constantly minyanim there for Kohanim. We'll make a minyan there for Kohanim. Don't worry, after Maaret HaMachpelah is going to be a tiyul, so you're not missing out on anything but entering the Maara, and you'll have your own davening, as we'll talk about, in a really holy site. Okay, so let's try to talk a little bit about what Maaret HaMachpelah. I see Kayla doesn't have a sheet. I see some other people. Where are the sheets? Please, if you come in, make sure you get a sheet. Okay, right. There are certain things that when you put them together, they make a lot of sense, right? Most famous, peanut butter and jelly. Winning combination. Makes a heck of a lot of sense. Some things you wonder, they look like they may sound the same. They're next to each other on the shelf, but they don't really max. Tuna fish and cereal. I don't know. But they're together on the shelf, Rabbi. You should make a winning combination, right? There's the tuna fish and there's the cereal. Just put them together and have tuna reel. Okay. There's always one. The most normal people. That's what's happening in this week's Parsha. You ask people to rifle off the Parshios. Kitetze, Kisava. They both sound like keys. They're both in the end. They're both long. They must be the same. They couldn't be different. Kisavo is a start, the fresh new start, the beginning of the end. Kitetze is the end of the middle. Kitetze is the end of the list of mitzvahs, most dense mitzvah, finishes with the last mitzvah, killing Amalek, and death in Judaism isn't central, it's the last part, it's not the central part of religion. And then the end of the Torah, Kisavo Alaretz, you enter the land, that's where we last left off, Eila Devarim, before Moshe reviewed the Shulchan Aruch. That's where we were in Parshas Devarim, ready to enter the land. Kisavo Alaretz, Alur Rishu. The beginning of the end. And in order to start the beginning of the end on a high note, an optimistic note, the Torah says, by the way, part of living in Eretz Yisrael, you'll be successful. Don't think this whole month situation is going to extend. You're going to work. It's more civilian. It's less supernatural, but that's what Hashem wants from this world. For whatever reason, Hashem doesn't want an endless state of miracles and epiphanies. He wants day to day. Find Him in the day to day, not just in the super. Where it says in Shabbos, if you say halal every day, you're a heretic. What does it mean? It sounds extremely pious. Get up every day and sing to Hashem. And not only does it seem to be inaccurate, it contradicts the fact that we say Psukkah Zimra every day. Isn't that halal? Where it says, no, it's a Zimra. Psukkah Zimra is finding Hashem in nature, in morality, in Jewish history. Halal is miracles. But say Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, afafuni chevle maves. Returning to our land. You can't just build religion based on the adventurous, on the extraordinary. Religion is moment by moment. Or else it tends to shrivel, it tends to fade, marginalize. Not every minute is supernatural, not every minute is adventure, not every minute is excitement. You'll see as you're passing from being adolescents into adults, that's part of the hardest passage to make. The passage from a life of adventure and excitement and fun and change and new, and when's the next fill in the blank, the next game, the next restaurant, the next event, the next trip, the next summer, the next... And real life is just day after day of meaning, not adventure. It's very hard to find meaning in adventure, very hard to find adventure in meaning. You got to make a choice. And as you transition, you got to tilt a little more towards meaning. The sooner you get that right in yeshiva, the better you'll be. Because in yeshiva, every day has more meaning. Very few have adventure. We try to sprinkle in adventure. Tomorrow's a little adventure. I don't mean we're going to rappel down Mars and Apollo. I mean that type of adventure. But different change. So Kisavah, Hashem says, you'll be successful. And with your success, come to the Beis HaMikdash and celebrate the mitzvah of Bikurim. And whenever Jews celebrate, they like to talk. We talk about things. We don't just eat, we talk. Do a lot of talking. We're big talkers. We tell stories because we're people of stories. Everything's a story. Life's a story. You're starting to write the chapters of your story. You don't know it. Sooner you realize you're holding a pen and every chapter you write now is going to directly impact later chapters, the more furiously you'll write, the more carefully you'll hold your pen. It takes a little bit of a while to have it dawn upon you that it's not until now people have been writing your story and they've been putting you into the boxes, these little captions. Now you're writing your biography. You have to write it really carefully, really assiduously. So Jews tell stories. What's the story we tell? Well, I would tell the story about faith. I would tell the story about bitachon, about hard work, about the fields and the farming and the how grateful I am to Hashem. And all of a sudden, that person standing in the Beis HaMikdash, it becomes the night of Pesach. We know these psukim. Arami Ovid Avi, Vayered Mitzrayim. Well, let's open the first source. Arami Ovid Avi, Vayered Mitzrayim, Vayagor Sham Seimat, Vayisham Legoy Gadolat Sambarav. I don't have to read these psukim. We all know them. They're the heart of the Seder. A four Pesach quintessence of Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's not Pesach, but this is the sad part of Pesach. No one reads these psukim because there's been so much time in Manishtan and Karpas and Rebbe Ben Azariah's white beard that you missed the real show. This is the real show. One pasuk about descent, one pasuk about bondage, one pasuk about prayer, and one pasuk about redemption. Harami Avid Avi Vayera Mitzrayim, descent. Vayera Sena Mitzrayim Vayanunu, bondage. Vayishma Banzaka Lashem Vishma Hashem Eskolenu, tefillah. Redemption. Makes sense on Pesach night, not standing in the Beis HaMikdash, right in the middle of the end of the year audit where you're offering tzedakah. Say some sukkah about aniyim. Say some sukkah about charity. Say some sukkah about tzedek tirdov. Say some sukkah about Hashem, Shemais. I can make a list of the top 10 sukkim that you would expect to recite when you're standing in the Beis HaMikdash displaying your gratitude, and this won't be in anyone's top 10. A review of Pesach Mitzrayim? The answer is based on something Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote about. It's really crucial. It's a good segue into tomorrow. This is a very, very delicate, brittle moment. You're successful financially, professionally, personally. What does that lead to? It could lead to one of two things. Egocentrism, withdrawal, turning in you, yourself, your life. Or it can lead to centrifugal force, something else beyond you, turning out. Well, I'm just living at this point in history, and thank God I'm successful, and the boundary and the border between success and failure is razor thin, really, really razor thin. For whatever reason, Hashem put me into this world, not to the world of 80 years ago, where I'd be hiding from Nazis in forests, and instead I'm sitting in comfortable yeshiva in Haaretz Yisrael, looking at the grass and eating pizza for dinner. And thank God HaKadosh Baruch Hu made me successful. What does that mean? What is my mission? So you can reach out or turn in. You can bunker in and protect and grab and want something for yourself. You can say, you know what? I'm part of something larger. It's not about my life. It's not about my comfort. I'm put into this world. I can't complain. I can't be jealous. So why wasn't I born during the Holocaust? Or wasn't I born? You're born into your world with your challenges, your setbacks, your adversities. And whatever Hashem gave me, and now that I'm successful, what does it mean? Where is it leading to? What am I part of? What's the larger story? Not what's my story, but what's our story? who came before me and who's going to come after me. I'm going to use this word a lot this year, so I want you to hear it now first. One of the modes of thinking, one of the traits I want you to walk out of this yeshiva with, and you probably never heard the word before. It's a nice word because it captures it. It's called verticality. Verticality means you're vertical. You're not living as a point. Somewhere in the middle of New York, somewhere in the middle of Chicago, somewhere in the middle of Johannesburg. My point, my life, my space, my period, my time, there's a line, and it has heft and lift, and people have come before you, and people will come after you. And just like you look at the people that came before you, and you ask, how did you change my world? What did you do to make my world different? People will look at your picture one day and say, how did you make our world different? When you've long since ceased from passing through this world. And that historical awareness, historical consciousness, which Baruch Hashem is so potent here in this country, because this is a country of history. It's easier to feel it here. It's harder to feel it where you're landlocked somewhere in the middle of nowhere on the sidelines. It's true, there's a lot of Jewish activity on the sidelines. There are shuls, there are schools, there are restaurants, but it's the sidelines. It's a big sideline, a lot of people sitting there. But it's not where history unfolded, it's not where history will unfold. It's a brief snapshot, it's a freeze frame. Freeze the frame, here we are, then the frame moves on, and the camera pans. And no one's really interested in what's going on the sidelines anymore. And not everyone will get the opportunity to live here on the main stage. But there's a difference between living on the sidelines and making the best of it and knowing this is the stage, or never even realizing that you're on the sidelines and thinking. The biggest prison of the prisons of delusion, where the bars are invisible, you don't know they exist, and you think you're free, but you're really trapped. Prisoner knows he's trapped, he's free. Prisoner doesn't know he's trapped, that's the worst. If I could make a jail and really want to psychologically torture my prisoners, it wouldn't have any bars. Then they think they're free. That's the trap a lot of people live in the world. They think they're really free. Not just about Israel, it's about life, and it's about decision-making, and about life and behavior. And that's what Rabbi Soloveitchik said. These are my words, obviously. That's why you're reading around the Oved Avi right at this moment of inflection, because you're right at the boundary. You're right at the precipice. You can either take a deep dive into selfishness and self-centeredness and me and mine and what do I want and my comfort and my needs, or you could parachute into Jewish history and be part of something larger and say, okay, now it's 2021, it's 2040, it's 2050, I am successful, I'm in the Beis HaMikdash, it's a moment, but what does this have to do with 1640 and what will it have to do with 2340? How can I connect the dots between my experience and something larger? That's why you read Arami Oved Avi before you celebrate Bikurim. And for the same reason Rabbi Soloveitchik said, that's why every day before we ask, I want and I want and I want and I want, before we talk to Hashem petitionally, we talk about Jewish redemption. It's the same juxtaposition, same peanut butter and jelly. Kol ha-somech gula l'tfila, the Gemara says. Source number two, maybe gula. What is so magical about mentioning Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, Vechor, and then Baruch Atah Hashem, Gual Yisrael, and then starting davening? How does that punch your ticket into the next world? Is it a magic potion? No, it's an awareness. It's an attitude. If you don't just recite Gula and Tefillah, you live Gula and Tefillah. That your needs that you acquire and secure through Tefillah are framed by Gula, framed by Jewish history, framed by something larger, a larger story. Then you live the life that warrants entry into the next world. If it's all about you and your comfort, then you don't get to the next world. It's not a magic trick. It's a barometer. It's a checklist. It filters the type of life Hashem wants you to lead, selects. So obviously this is a good opportunity to talk about tomorrow. To talk about trying to use tomorrow, and not just tomorrow, but your year, to make this book called Tanakh and the people in that book called Tanakh come alive. And it's hard to come alive because they were shepherds and we're engineers. And they went to outhouses and we use indoor plumbing. And they traveled on rickety carts and we travel in space. And the world feels so different and ancient that it's very easy just to dismiss it and divorce it and amputate it because this world feels so compelling and this world feels so such a draw. And that's why coming here to a place like this, to yeshiva like this, to a world like this, to turn that book into your book. And tomorrow we're going to try to turn that book into your book. Let me fast forward to a story I wanted to tell you at the end, but I'll tell it to you in the beginning because it's just as good as an introduction as it would be as a summary. About 6 years ago, 5 years ago, if I'm off, I'm off by a year or two, there was an intifada in Israel. It wasn't a full-blown intifada, but there was a lot of knifings and stabbings. And one of the earliest victims, two of the earliest victims, were the son and daughter-in-law of Chana Henkin. Chana Henkin is the founder of Nishmat, a women's institution, and one of the pioneers in women's education. I used to teach there a long time ago, so I know her. So I went to her house to perform Nicham Avel after the terror incident. I was sitting in her living room, rather small living room, and a group of girls from the seminary came marching in with their Rebbe or their teacher. Obviously, it was a trip. They didn't know her. She didn't know them. Just, this is a person of prominence, and she suffered a tragedy. Let's all visit her. So it was a very awkward situation. About 15, 16 teenage girls sitting with a woman they didn't know. And again, even a house of a novel is generally awkward, but you're sitting right on top of each other, so it's even more awkward. So Mrs. Henkin decides she's going to make small talk to just draw the kids into the conversation. So she turns to the girls and says, "Girls, how many books of Tanakh are there?" And the girl says, 24. So she said, "You're wrong. There's a 25th book of Tanakh. And it's the story of the Jewish people returning to their land and the struggle to return to their land. And we're writing that book. And my children who were killed are in that book. They're part of that book." And that story synopsizes what I just said, that we are living history. And our history began thousands of years ago in this land with our great people who founded our peoplehood, and they set certain morals and standards and ideas that reshaped human consciousness and built the framework of our existence. And spending a year in Israel is not just ideology of what happened after 1948, though it's that as well, but everything that led up to 1948. And there would be no 1948 were it not for everything that led up to 1948. Someone once asked me, who my Zionist heroes are? I said, the Chassam Sofer, Rabbi Kiva Eger, the Maharal, the Ramban, Rav Huna. They didn't fight in the War of Independence. They didn't hoist flags in Yom HaTzmaut or light torches. But we only return to this land if we keep our identity and our destiny intact. We don't deserve this land. This is Hashem's land. Another 2 weeks you realize it's Shemitah. Everything returns to Hashem. No one touches the land. He gives it in history, and Hashem and prophecy will dictate who ultimately settles his land. Not politics or diplomacy. It's all just a facade. It's all just a passing show. It may look impressive. It may look frightening. It's all just human noise. Hashem will decide. Now, it doesn't mean we should act irresponsibly. We have to subject ourselves to the political process. But don't get intimidated by it. Don't get frightened by it. Don't get persuaded by it. It's all just a lot of noise. Bereishis bara Elokim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu exerts authorial control. He created this land, this world, and he'll give it to who he deems, and he promised us this land to fulfill our mission when the time is right. Maybe the time's not right yet for our full return. So these were the people who struggled to live in this land, struggled to carve out a world of Hashem and a world of moral chaos and theological confusion. And tomorrow we're visiting their gravesite where they're buried. And part of Yiddishkeit is that there are certain locations that are different. It's really important for people that are trained like you're trained. I don't like terms. I will never use those terms in this class. I hate modern orthodoxy. I hate Torah Mada. I hate terms. What Jew should you be? You should be an Oved Hashem. How do you become an Oved Hashem? There are two ways. The fraudulent way is taking a stamp and stamping your head, I'm this type of Jew. That doesn't get you anywhere. The real way is learn, grow, daven, work, compare, and be inspired by people. Great world of Jews out there, be inspired by as many as you want. Putting on a kippah and stamping yourself as Dati Lumi or modern Orthodox or Chardal or Ketchup, it doesn't help anyone. It doesn't change anything. You want to be real? Grow, learn. I promise you these terms won't exist in 200 years. Didn't exist 200 years ago. They're just stopgap measures to create communal identity. So you can either be a pauper or you can be a real person. Make your choice. You want to be a real person? Grow and learn. So part of the problem with the way you were trained is, well, Hashem is everywhere. Let's try to stretch Hashem to every location. And Hashem, yeah, but the world isn't a pancake. There are valleys and mountains, and there's certain places that have Kedusha. And when Yaakov visits, it's not that he's the first person to experience it, but it's almost an awakening. Source number three, Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso. Vayomar Chen Yesh Hashem Bamakom Hazeh Venochi Lo Yadati. Vayira Vayomar Ma Nara Hamakom Hazeh Ein Zeh Kim Beis Elokim Vezeh Shar HaShamayim. So he realizes this is a gateway to heaven. He also realizes, as Rashi says, it's not just a place of innate Kiddusha, because it's so proximate to Hashem, it's also a location of historical resonance. That's where his father was. So it hits him twice. This is a place of Hashem. It's also a place of my history. It's both. It's my legacy, and it's a gateway. It's the doorstep of heaven. And he says, it's got to be different. Now, when we lived with the Beis HaMikdash, it was obvious that there were places that were different and had real halachic sanctity. And you couldn't walk there if you were Baal Keri. And you couldn't walk there if you gave birth. And you couldn't walk there if you touched the sheretz. It was built into your day. Just like kashrus is built into your day. I'd say, Ezra, just keep looking at me. Ezra, you taught me a Torah today. And you know what? It would be an innocuous question. If I asked the question today, it would be an invasive question. Ezra, you taught me a Torah. Did you touch the sheretz or did you not? And that would determine whether we're walking this route or that route. It would be like Waze. You plug into Waze, I want to get somewhere, I'm like, Tamei Atar. Oh, Tamei, take me this way, take me in the alternate route. It wasn't a big deal. It was a big deal because it shaped your behavior. Now, when we lost the Beis HaMikdash, we pretty much lost locations of Kedusha. It's like a whole part of our religion has been amputated. Sometimes teenagers have a hard time with religion. They don't understand, it doesn't make sense. Rabbi, I have this question. Rabbi, I have that question. Rabbi, I have this question. Let's say, you know what, before I answer your questions, let me frame the conversation. Are you a hockey fan? Yeah, big hockey fan. I love the hockey. I bleed for the hockey team. Well, in hockey, when you commit a foul or penalty, you're taken off the ice. You have to play shorthanded. It doesn't happen in other sports, soccer as well, international football, commit a crime, 9 versus 11, good luck, right? We all know what happens when it's a 10-on-11 team or it's a 3-on-5 hockey. We know where this is landing. We know how this game is ending. Well, that's how Judaism is playing right now. We're playing shorthanded. We don't have a melech. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have nevuah. We don't have Ruach HaKodesh. We don't have Nisim. You're looking at a shadow religion. Scaled down. Maybe half. And it's incredible that half could be so powerful and so tensile and so durable that it just shapes the entire world. We're playing short-handed and we're still winning. We're still getting the championship. But if there's something you don't understand, it's because you're not seeing the full... How would you think? How would you behave if you lived in a world of cause and effect and every time you committed a chet, you got sick with COVID? I don't know how many times you'd line up for the chet. I don't know how often you'd show up to morning sin. You won't need rabbis to get you to morning set. It would be a very different world. How would it feel if you had a Navi? And a Navi came to you and said, Ruach HaKodesh tells me you should behave this way. It's not me. It's not advice. It's not wisdom. It's Ruach HaKodesh. This is a letter from HaKodesh Baruch Hu. It's directly from you. It's tailor-made to you. It's not about this guy. It's not about that one. It's for you. It'd be a different world. And we lost that. But one of the closest we have is gravesites. Now, do grave sites have Kedusha? Well, most of us in this room certainly know halacha Kedusha. You can go there when you're Tommy. There's no halachas that apply to gravesite. In the Hasidic world, there's a lot of Kedusha associated with a non-halacha Kedusha. Most of the people here are not trained in the Hasidic world. So let's not talk about that. It's not like I'm rejecting it or dismissing it. I'm just trying to talk at your frequency, talk at our frequency, how we behave. Someone wants to discuss whether they want to become a little more Hasidish and participate in that system of values, more than happy to talk about it. But even in our world, when you visit a gravesite, you visit a site of someone that stood for values that you deeply identify with. You shape your life based on those values. You don't just shape your life based on those values, you also try to tap into their lives and their experiences on your behalf and your benefit. A lot of people in this room are trained to be self-reliant. When we see someone who's self-reliant, we get all excited. That person is independent. He's not a parasite. We have a whole lexicon of words that we see as commendable and words that we see as pejorative. And the pejorative words are reliant, dependable, parasite, you don't take care of yourself, your life isn't in order. And who do we admire? The rugged individualist, the guy who can take the team and win the game on their own. and that can support themselves and can battle the enemy in the movie all by themselves, killing 500 soldiers with one little shotgun. Those are our heroes. Throw that away starting Matzei Shabbos. Starting Matzei Shabbos, you're going to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu pleading for your life, and if you think for a second you deserve what you're pleading for, I don't know which storyline you're leading. Because that's not the movie I'm in. And I'm desperate to find some reason to justify my request for life. And ultimately it comes back to, Notzer Chesed La'alafim. Hashem, maybe I don't deserve it, but look at who I am. I am a Jew. I am a child of those great people. And not just Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You know the images that flood my head? My Zaidi, my Bubby, my parents, my great-grandparents, the great rabbis in my family, the great people in my family. And that's why I go every year to the Beis HaKvaros, not just to Maris HaMachpelah. I go every year to Har Herzl, and I visit the graves of my grandparents, and I visit the graves of my Rosh Yeshiva, and I visit the graves of a boy who learned in this yeshiva, Talmud of mine, who died on Kiddush Hashem, and I visit the graves of other people. Am I davening to these people? Chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom. But I am trying to remind myself of where I come from, so that when I ask Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, please, give me what I ask. Please grant my wish. Maybe I don't deserve it, but I'm part of that larger story. I want those graves and those names to be flooding my imagination. Because Zchus Avos is not a guarantee. Zchus Avos is more compelling and potent when you live their lifestyle. Otherwise, it just becomes vicarious. Oh, yeah, my grandfather's already, I'm not, I've betrayed you, I'm duplicitous, but, you know, you owe me. Is that what you want your relationship with Hashem to be like? And you know what? It may not even work, according to some Rishonim. In Parshas Shlach, Moshe furiously davens for Jewish survival, admittedly less successfully than in Parshas Kitisa, because in Parshas Kitisa, the show goes on. In Parshas Shlach, everything grinds to a halt for 40 years. A lot of people die. The entire generation dies. He's trying his hardest, and he's as successful as he could be, and he employs the Yud Gimel Midos that will recite Matzei Shabbos. By the way, since I won't have all of you here, I'll talk about it with my shiur, but please, please listen. Slichos in this yeshiva are very different than the slichos you've ever heard. Not a lot of singing, a lot of shouting. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be the shouter. You can be the singer. It's hard to sing when people are shouting. It's a little hard logistically. But I just don't want you to be like, oh my goodness, why is everyone screaming? Why the shrieking? Who died? You know, it's just a different tone. It's a yeshiva tone. You go to any yeshiva in the world, you'll hear screaming. In shul, somehow, for whatever reason, we could talk about sociologically why screaming is seen in some way. Not in the yeshiva world, people scream during Yom Shani and Kippur. And Mirat Hashem, the climax will happen Tfilas Ne'ila in this yeshiva. You know what Tfilas Ne'ila is? You don't even have to bring your machzor. Just scream. Everyone's just screaming. No one knows what you're up to. Hashem, Hashem, Kea! Everyone's screaming offhand. No one knows what everyone else is doing. A lot of screaming. You'll see. You make it into it, you may not. I'm just trying to prepare you, because if you're not prepared, whoa, where did this come from? Why is everyone so, they're not angry, it's petitional, it's devotion, it's very different, just get used to it. But getting back to Parsha Shlach, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't recite Notzer Chesed La'alafim. He says many of the Yud Gimel Midos, he leaves out a few, but he omits Notzer Chesed La'alafim. Why? Ban says, source number 6. Lo hisker b'tfilazu Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov hatam. Come on, the Ramban says. You're asking that question? It's a silly question. These are people that are spitting in the face of Israel. They're invited. They're a ticket to live in Israel. They're 10 days away from Israel. And they just turn their backs on Israel. They may have other reasons to be forgiven. But one thing they don't have is chusavos. You can forget about that puppy. It isn't coming home. You can't scorn Israel on the one hand and then turn to Hashem. By the way, it's Zchus Avos. They sacrificed their lives for this land. All they wanted to do was live here, to follow God into this land. They left everything. You have more courage or less courage, that's a different story. But you can't be holding your ticket of invitation a few days away from Eretz Yisrael, mocking and scorning, spreading slander and libel. But Hashem, I'm a child of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The nerve! The nerve! Moshe didn't even have that audacity. I'm not even going there. Okay, you're Kael, you're Rachum, you're Chanan. There is no way that Moshe is starting that conversation. That's not going to end well for the Jewish people after the Meraglim. Well, you guys are the opposite. You're here.
look around you. If there is a year to switch your tone of tefillah, don't daven to Hashem Nisi Rosh Hashanah and Kippur based on what I deserve. Get that out. Get it off your plate. Daven from a point of dependence. Daven from a point of reliance. Daven, everyone now when I'm speaking, who is the person in your family lineage that you want to think about this Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? Is it a rabbi? Is it a Holocaust martyr? Is it someone great that accomplished something great for the people of Israel, for the land of Israel? Or is it just your bubby who just kept halacha? You know, let me tell you about people who are Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. Okay, let me tell you the following story that probably happened with a lot of your bubbies. I don't mean your bubby that you know that's living down the block from you now, but go back 2-3 centuries. If you went through a time machine and you visited a Polish village 200 years ago at night, you'd see something really spooky. You'd see three women with hoods on their head walking through the forest. Oh my goodness, these must be witches. Why would three women be walking in the forest late at night? I gotta get out some garlic or something. Who knows where vampires are coming next. And one was holding a knife, like an axe. And one is holding a towel. And one is holding like a heavy rope. Okay, this is getting really scary. Who are they going to kill? Whose head are they going to chop off and hang the body? Like this is scary. I'm not getting in the way of these women. You're following them at a safe distance. And then you start seeing these women. They take off their hoods and they're like, they don't look so scary. In fact, they're pretty. They're like, you're bubby. So why is my bubby carrying an axe and rope? What are they, possessed? No, it's a cold winter night. And one of those women has to go to the mikveh. Problem is there's no mikveh in town because it's a small Polish shtetl. And it's a freezing cold Polish winter. I mean, it's in Toronto winter. It's a lot colder than Toronto. Just look it up on the charts. A lot colder in Poland than in Toronto. Maybe equivalent. And one woman takes the hacksaw and starts hacking into the ice because the river's all iced up. Makes a little hole about 4x4. And the other woman starts tying the rope to the third woman's ankle. Not too tight because it'll be a chatzitza. Because that woman who has to go to the mikveh is dipping into this frozen, cold, iced-up river, and she's going to be tossed downstream by the river in hypothermia. So she needs a rope to hold onto so she can climb her way back out of the hole. What are these women crazy? It's the middle of the winter. It's an iced-up river. What are you doing skinny dipping in an iced-up river? Taras HaMishpacha, of course. Like, it's the most obvious thing. We go into a... So I'm sure your grandparents did that. Well, you're going to a comfortable... Doesn't have to be people of grant, just people who were dedicated to the lives that we're trying to inspire you towards, and then all of a sudden you're saying, Hashem, that's the life I want to put in my bullseye. I want to try to get there. Give me the chance. I come from good stock. Look at my father. Look at my grandfather. There's got to be someone in everyone's family. And if you don't, then go back to Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. But you got to identify. It's not just showing up tomorrow and saying, okay, Avraham, do me a favor. Go up to Shemayim. It's because this... Your life is my life. You're my Bobby. Well, I told you guys when I was at the when we were at the monument for the three boys, I felt the presence of the Avos during those 3 weeks more deeply than I ever felt them because I knew that the following scene was unfolding. Let's read the scene together. It's a long, 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 long medrash, but I just photocopied excerpts of it. If you want, you may remember on Tisha B'Av there's a kina that is based on this matters. The kinah is Az Bahaloch Yirmiya al Kivrei Avos. It's about Yirmiya awakening the Avos, literally. Yirmiya living through destruction, living through Babylonian invasion, living through death and rape and bondage and everything, your worst nightmare. Yirmiya travels where you will travel tomorrow. Yirmiya walks into Maaret HaMachpelah and he says, wake up! Your children are being ransacked. Your children are being... Wake up. Source number 7. Miyad halach Yirmiya lemaras hamachpelah v'amar li'avos ha'olam. Imdu, higia zman shatem misbakshim. Now's your time. You've slept, you've slumbered in your grave for thousands of years since you've died. You've had your menucha. If we're suffering, you wake up. Now it's time for you. V'yitzarek u'boche, paragraph number 2, at shegia l'avos ha'olam. And he was screaming and crying. He had to walk down. As you'll see tomorrow, it's very, very deeply embedded. So you have to like climb into a cavern. And he's screaming as he's walking down. Wake up, wake up. He's living his avos. Ba'avram l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, line number 2, section 2. Boche, he's crying. Memarit zikno, he's pulling his beard out. Tolei saras rosho, pulling his hair out. Amar Avram, the next bold face, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is going on? Did you forget that I was at Akedah Yitzchak? Did you forget my sacrifice for you, Hashem? How could this happen? And Hashem quiets Avram. And then Yitzchak, Ba Yitzchak, next page, Ba Yitzchak, bold face, Rabbanu Shalom. I'm not going to say anything, Hashem. I'm just going to do one thing. Look at me. Hashem, look at me. You know what Yitzchak goes? He goes like this. You don't need words sometimes. It makes his neck. That's like, it should be obvious, Yitzchak says. I was there. I stuck my neck out for you. I literally was willing to die for you. And this is how you repay my children. And then Hashem quiets Yitzchak, Yaakov. And finally, just to summarize the Medrash, Be'osa Shah, Kafza Rachel, Imeinu Fekadosh Baruch Hu, says, remember my heroism, and Hashem can't deny Rachel. As we talked about, Rachel is selfless. Rachel then put herself first. Rachel saves Leah from mortification. So Hashem promises her, source number 7, the end, last four lines, Pasukim in Yirmiyah, Ko'amar Hashem, Kol Berama Nishma, Nehi B'chi Tamarim, V'shavu Vanim L'Gvulam. Who knows? Who knows which boys in this room will fulfill that prophecy to Rachel? One day you may get an aliyah in the Beis Medrash of Gush, or whatever else. Wherever. Maybe it'll be when you retire. Maybe you'll make your money, have your life, and they'll sing B'shavu Vanim. Nothing better than coming home. During the pandemic, we realized how comfortable it is to be home, just to be in your home with your people, and to have that quiet, quiet calm, to know you're with your own. That's this haunting, haunting image I just can't get past, because pandemics in foreign lands as a foreigner are not a picnic. Because you're always at the bottom of the food chain, and when people feel stress and fear and suspicion, it was not pretty for Jews. In the wake of the bubonic plague, there were hundreds and hundreds of pogroms that completely eviscerated Western European Jewry. And whatever hostilities existed, and there were hostilities, there were tensions. One of the scenes I'll never forget is in the earlier stages of the corona here in Israel. So there was a lot of contagion in the Haredi sector and in the Haredi city of Bnei Brak, and there was a lot of tension because people who were not in the Haredi communities felt that they were disregarding the rules. And then the army came in and they handed out food and attended to their needs. And despite the differences and despite that, and there was some venom, I'm not excusing it, we take care of our own. We take care of our own. There was finger pointing, there was frustration, but we take care of our own. At the end of the day, we are the same family, and we take care of our own. We will not let them starve, we'll not let them go sick. And it's just breathtaking to see. When you think about the ways that Jews must have suffered throughout history in the aftermath of plagues or in the middle of plagues. So here's the challenge tomorrow. Can you lead their lives? Can you feel that, you know, it's different, it's technology, it's science, it's internet, but can you break through all that static? What would you say to Avram here in the room? Which Av would you like to meet first? Which of the Imos would you like to ask a question to? Who would you like to ask advice from? The same way you can ask those questions about Rebbeim and Yeshiva or Gedolim that you know or family members. Take Sefer Bereishis and make it the book of your life. Or take the book of your life and add it to Tanakh, as Mrs. Henkin said. You see, a life will change. It's less about sports stars and less about the athletes and culture and movies. It gets a bit part, but like you're... I don't know, if Avraham Avinu walked in the room next to LeBron James, who would you run to? Can you pull that switch? Where a high school dropout that throws a ball through a hoop at 50 feet is not as exciting as someone that changed history. You want to watch the art, fine, but it shouldn't carry that type of emotional bondage, emotional immersion, emotional investment. So it's happening tomorrow, and it's happening Erev. Like, fill your mind with the images. Take pictures tomorrow. Or if you don't want to take pictures with your mind. So when you say Yud Gimel Midos, you're going to say Yud Gimel Midos this year about 100 times. You're going to say the Yud Gimel Midos Terachim between Slichos and Yom Kippur about 100 times. So when you say Notzer Chesel Elofim, you're standing in front of Kever Avraham. And it's not just that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are buried there. Here's a news flash. You may have heard this before, some of you. There is a lot of debate as to whether Rachel is actually buried in Beit Lechem. The debate surrounds the fact that Yaakov is returning from Lavan. Where does Lavan live? In the north. And on the way back to Yerushalayim, Rachel dies. You don't pass through Beit Lechem on your way back from Iraq and Syria. you may pass through a place called Beit Lechem in the north, the first Beis HaMikdash city in the north called Beit Lechem, or Ephrata. There's an Ephrata up north. So he once asked Rav Amital a really legitimate question. Rebbe, if Rachel isn't buried there, like, what's the big deal? Should we continue going? And he said something that changed my life. He said, even if she's not buried there, the tears of Jews that have been shed on that site for thousands of years have consecrated that site. You may not be praying at Rachel's Kever, you're praying at a site that Jews were b'shofech libam for thousands of years. Think about that. The Gemara says in Brachos, source number 8, Miyom shachar beis hamikdash ninalu shari tefila. Really, really a harsh statement. Imagine, close your eyes and think about this iron gate falling down, the clank of the iron gate. Hashem doesn't want our tefilas anymore. Think about a world in which your tefilas are immediately responded to one way or another. So much of our frustration is we don't even know whether our tefilas are accepted. Imagine when Hashem says yes or says no or explains. There's a direct line. You're talking to Hashem. You're WhatsApping Hashem. He's not ghosting you. You're getting an answer. Today, unfortunately, Hester upon him. Half the time we're ghosted. We don't know what Hashem's responding. It's hard to know. But here's an incredible line. The Gemara says, yeah. Afa pisha shari tefila ninalu, shari dimos lo ninalu. I'm going to ask a really, really private question. I'm going to close my eyes because I don't want anyone in this room to think I'm even looking at them. I'm going to just scan the room. But I have to ask you private questions so that it's real. Rather than just talking above you, I want to talk to you. So here's a private question. I'm closing my eyes. Did you ever cry during tefillah? And here's an even more. Maybe you never cried. Aside from, I don't mean being hurt. Being hurt is just pain cry. But real crying. Did you ever cry? That's my wish to all of you. That's all it takes to succeed in tefillah. If you shed a tear, I can promise you your tefillahs for Hashanah Yom Kippur have been accepted. It takes a lot of authenticity to get there. It takes a lot of hard work. There are a lot of facades and a lot of self-defense and self-denial and conceit. And there's so much to break through. But tshuva is just a tear. It's just that one tear of remorse, that one deeply authentic tear. By the way, if you cry, again, I'm not looking at anyone, don't wipe away the tears. The minhag in Kabbalah is put the tears on your face. That cleanses you. Maybe sometimes people cry, they run for a tissue. Just now my most prized possession, if I lose this, like I hope I didn't lose that to look at it every year, I would be heartbroken. If I lost this, like I know what I would do. It's my handkerchief. I have a linen handkerchief that I use every year of Shani and Kippur. You can't imagine how many tears have been absorbed in that handkerchief. That's my big dick. If I lose it, that's my connection. Every year I stand in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu and I feel something deep and I'm sad, I'm remorseful, and it comes out and I know that's my truer self. My purer self is in that handkerchief. My best self is in that handkerchief. So you know how many tears have been shed in Maris Machpel? You know how many Jews have traveled across mountains, sailing in ships for months, vomiting their guts out on ships, eating raw fish, traveling through crusader invasions and Arab legions and selling off their possessions. I get on a bus tomorrow. See you in 20 minutes. I'm taking a car tomorrow. I'll see you in Hebron. Just appreciate where you're walking. Most of your grandparents could literally, when I say they could only dream, I mean, you know what happened on Tisha B'Av night? Well, you know what happened? Slichos night, they would gather together in shul, and before Slichos, they would all gather, all the men would gather in shul and say, Yankel, take it out. What's Yankel taking out? Yankel had a great-grandfather who made it to the Holy Land, and he scribbled a little etch of what the Maris Machpelah looked like. Yankel, pass it over to Yinkel. Okay, Yinkel, pass it over to Shmuel. Shmuel, give it to Pinkela. Pinkela, give it to Shmuel. Went around the room. This is Yankel is sketching what the Maris Machpelah is. Maybe one, it was all frayed and yellow, and you know, and all of a sudden, Yehudi sneezed. Yehudi sneezing on the Maris Machpelah. Take a tissue, it's over you, and nosebleed. Oh my goodness, this is like their one link to a land they'd never see, in a place they could only dream of. We all know Yehuda Levi as the great 12th century Spanish poet, philosopher, who tried his hardest to come to Israel. It's hard to know whether he made it. Different legends. Some say he never made it. Some say he made it and he was killed the day he got here by a passing Arab soldier. Hard to know. We don't really have clear historical records. But one thing is clear. Boy, did he want to be here. And did he try to get here. And in the famous, famous kinnah. This kinnah is so famous that it has become a cultural repertoire. There are so many lines in this kinnah that have been appropriated for Jewish culture. For example, who knows the song Naomi Shemer? Yerushalayim, right? One of the famous songs. The Shirayach Ani Kinar, I am a harp for your songs. It's taken from this kinnah. The Russians, the Jews who brought the Russian Empire to its knees, the refuseniks were called Asirei Tzion. They're being held out of their love for Tzion. It's taken from this kinnah. It's probably one of the greatest cultural icons. Not a Tosfos, it's not a Psak Halacha. It's just a distillation of our culture, of all the hopes and dreams of Jews. It's like you want to feel Jewish, read this kinnah. I told you so often, part of being an Oved Hashem is just being a good Jew. And it's not always the same. There are people who are religiously meticulous who just they don't know what it is to be a Jew. And be honest, they're good Jews who aren't that great at religion. Right? Mental experiment. Close your eyes. Who is the best Jew you've met who isn't Orthodox? Have you met someone like that? That person is just a great Jew. Why they're a great Jew? Their love of Israel. Their love of other Jews. Their love of justice. They just feel like, you know, they're so proud to be Jewish. Why don't they keep all that? Whatever reason. The end of history, not everyone makes it to the finish line religiously. But he's just so proud to be Jews. If you haven't met someone like that, think about someone. For me, the Menachem Begin. You know, have I checked Menachem Begin's sitzes lately? I mean, not lately, but if I checked up how he was, he yotze the mitzvah of matzah, shir kazayis bechtei achilas prasek bechazanish? I don't know. But I wish people would have a sense of Jewish pride in Jewish history. I wish people, that's part of it. That's part of it. So Yehuda Levi in this kinnah, listen to Yehuda Levi before you go to Maris Nefela on that bus tomorrow, because you have to wake up a little early. Mi Yitneini, source number 10, Mishotek Bamakomos, Ashenigla Lokim Lachazayich Vitzirayich. I wish I had wings. I wish I could fly. He never dreamed that humans could fly. Imagine if he saw planes overhead today, tin cans, moving people. I wish Mi Yitneini Mishotek. I wish I could fly in the places that Hashem revealed himself to his prophets and his pivotal people, Tzirayach. Mi Asali Kenafayim, please. I want to be Daedalus. I want to be Icarus. I want to fly. I want to fly to Israel. How long were these people at sea? And still is a 50-50 proposition to make it there alive with your sanity intact, not to be thrown overboard by pirates. That wasn't a sure thing. You had to wait months until the tides were correct, until the weather. I mean, you sat there. I tell you, Hanassus Archim was a totally different thing, because people would come to Jewish areas and they'd stay for a few months until the boat left. Tonight, can I stay over the night? Can I have a meal? Hanassus Archim was real. People were living in your house. It was a whole different set of, it was a different thing to be Jewish. You bring someone into your home for a year till they could take the next boat to Israel or to Hungary or wherever they were traveling to. It's a different feel. Sephardim still had that feel. One of the differences between living in Israel and living in America is in America, when people live with non-religious, they live as kirov. Let's be makarov them. We have the truth, and they're going to be our audiences. In Israel, it's interface. Like, what do we have? What do they have? Like, what can we learn from people, even if they're not religious? Like, what can we learn? What can Ashkenazi from Jews learn from living with Sephardim in Ofakim or Netivot? Or, okay, so then, I'll give you a long list. Kibbut Avayim, boy, we have a lot to Hachnasas Archim. We have so much to learn, generosity, open heart. I mean, there's so much to learn because this is all our tradition. And Sephardi tradition took one trajectory over the last 200 years, and for many that trajectory meant that a lot of them weren't classically halachically orthodox, and Ashkenazi trajectory took another turn. I mean, just look at what happened in the Ashkenazi world the last 200 years. Secularization, enlightenment, reform, conservative, Hasidus, Musar, Zionism, Holocaust, Torah Mada. What happened to the Sephardi world last 200 years? Nothing. They just lived the lives that they always lived. If you want to see what we were like 200 years ago, look at Sephardi. Before all this commotion started, before we got all confused, who am I? What am I? Who am I against? Who am I for? We're just all together. We're just like, you know, we're all one family, for good and bad. It's not good or bad. It's just different. But we went through a lot. They didn't go through all that. Oh, did I mention the yeshiva movement? A lot. Which yeshiva did you go to? Meir, Panovich. They've just sat and learned Torah. A very different feel. Very different feel. I wish I had wings. I would fly. I would move the chambers of my heart along your rows. Wow, this is really raw. I want to fuse my heart to your places. I want to fall on your ground. Can I just touch the ground of Israel? And I just caress the stones. Tomorrow when you walk by Maris Machpelah, just touch the stones. And I'll find the ground beloved to me. And here's the punchline. Af ki bi'amdi alei kivros avosai. And I would stand by the graves of my grandparents. He's talking about Maris Machpelah. The eshtomein bechevron. And I will ponder Chevron. Alei mivchar kvarayach. Standing above your choices graves. I don't think he ever made it to Chevron. Even according to the legends that he made it to Israel, it doesn't sound like he made it to Chevron. This remained a dream for him. 800 years ago in Spain, or waiting in, I think it was in Egypt, waiting to go to Israel. I think he died, according to many accounts, he died in Egypt. Yeah, get in the bus. Make sure you sign up. Bring it, bring, he's watching you. I know one thing, he's watching Maris Machpelah. Don't take it for granted. He didn't. And come tomorrow and be a part of where Jews have been crying for, dreaming for thousands of years. And I'll just end with one final point, because it's already 7:15. There's another layer. Yes, go to identify with the Avos, and yes, go to identify with the Jews that have cried there, and go to identify. But going tomorrow to Chevron has an added layer to it. And it's a Rosh Hashanah layer. Because in Rosh Hashanah, we dream of utopia. And we dream of the Malchus Hashem bringing prosperity to the entire globe. Because it's a universal day. And I'll talk about this. Next week is a non-miss chabur. You have to come next week. I'm going to take you through Moshe. Do not miss it. It'll be the chug of your life. I promise you. I'm not saying this for me. I don't need people to fill the seats you need if you're tefillas Moshe. But that day will only come when there's no corona, no war, no strife, and no suffering, and no poverty. That day will only come when the Jews return to their land that are realigned with heaven and realigned with Hashem, because that is the core. That is the nuclear core of human prosperity. Until history is aligned, utopia is still delayed. And that's why in Rosh Hashanah we will pray for that final scene. We'll recite Tehillim Mem Zayin, read it very, very quickly, Source 9, Kol Amim Tikru Chaf, everyone will gather and clap for Hashem that day. Ki Hashem Elyon Naral Kol Aretz, Hashem will be there, and everyone, nothing that matters to you will be important then. Sports will fade, and politics will vanish, and culture will be laughable, and everyone will gather and see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when will that happen? Yad Ber Amim Tachteinu, Elim Tachas Vagleinu, when Hashem submits the world to Jewish inspiration. Yivchar Lanu Es Nachal Aseinu, when He selects our land, Es Gaon Yaakov Asher Ahev Sela, the land of Yaakov. Alo Kim Betru Hashem Bekol Shafer, then Hashem will be coronated. Nedivei Amim Neasafu, last Pasuk, all the leaders will gather, Am Elohei Avraham, to celebrate the people of Avraham, Ki Lelekim Magini Eretz Me'od Na'ala. Get used to it, say it 7 times. Guys, we're not there yet. We're back in our land, but no one's clapping for us. We're back in our land and no one's really so happy for us. This is still a dream, but at least we're on course for it. And every time you visit Maris Machpelah, we're inching closer. Every time you visit Maris Machpelah, you're reasserting this parak. Not militantly, don't turn tomorrow to anyone, don't come to political demonstrations. Politics is all sham. Nobody knows what happens on Twitter. Twitter's a big joke, it's a cartoon. But by davening tomorrow, Maris Machpelah, metaphysically, that's the world that counts. The more Jews that go and daven there, the more Jews that walk through those halls, the more Jews that go to Chevron in the right way, in the right time, in the proper manner, this parak is closer than ever. So those are the three things to think about. Identify with the Avos, stand in the place the Jews have thought about, dreamed about, and davened at for years, and especially the Kohanim, if you can't go, don't worry, where you're standing is where Jews have stood. And the thing about how we're trying so hard to get this Perek, to accelerate the Perek, tomorrow's an accelerant. I can promise you one thing. You go tomorrow to Davin, this Perek will be a lot closer in your own way. See you all tomorrow. Again, please don't miss the opportunity. If you're sick or whatever, but don't just, day off, everyone's going. I'm skipping the baseball game. Not a baseball game.